It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. A newly updated index on early childcare workers paints a pretty bleak picture. Most workers for children under three make around $10 an hour. Those for children under between three and five make about $13 an hour. Contrast that with kindergarten teachers who make about double those numbers or more. It's time, say the authors of the report, to look at how we value early childhood education and to talk seriously about making it part of our public education system. In a political atmosphere where even K through 12 is threatened, and let me be clear, kindergarten teachers don't make that much, how realistic is the goal to include preschool, especially when you're more likely to hear about free college education than an expansion of public funding for two-year-olds? We are taking your calls on this, 800-642-1234. Are you an early childhood educator? What drew you to the role, and what is the most difficult part of what you do? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. We know you're probably really busy at the moment, but you can try and call. Also, ideas@WPR.org is the email, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Marcy Whitebook is the co-director for the Center of the Study of Childcare Employment at the University of California, Berkeley, and she is the co-author of several books on early childhood care and education. Marcy, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you so much for inviting me this morning.
So I should note that this Center for the Study of Childcare Employment has put out its second, I believe, Early Childhood Workforce Index. What is this?
The Early Childhood Workforce Index is a state-by-state assessment of the earnings of early educators, along with an assessment of state policies focused on the workforce or other state policies that would be supportive of the workforce. And it tries to give both a national picture, but also allows every state to look at how they're doing in relationship to one another. And also, because this is our second biennial index, we will be doing this every couple of years so we can measure progress.
And so what is this includes preschool teachers, daycare workers, anybody else?
Right. We focus on all the people who, all the members of the early childhood workforce who are caring for and educating children from birth or, you know, from babies up until school entry. We also have some information about directors of early childhood programs. And we do include some comparative information about kindergarten and elementary school teachers so people can understand, you know, how our teachers of the youngest children compare in relationship to teachers of older children.
So it's interesting to me that you're comparing people who are underpaid with people who are even more underpaid.
Right. Well, I think I would say that all teachers in the U.S. are not paid adequately for their work. So that sort of is the starting point. And that in no way by talking about the underpayment of early childhood teachers are we in any way saying that K through 12 teachers are earning enough. But from the perspective of the early childhood field, we're so far behind the K through 12 teachers that basically we're sort of saying we have to lift the boat for everybody, but we're just pointing out what's going on for the teachers of our youngest children, which is in really stark contrast to what we know about development, that where the point of period of life where development and learning is at its most at its height and most sensitive, the teachers are the least often the least trained and definitely the least valued. So, you know, it's not I think we were very much, you know, in the early childhood field inspired by teachers of older children speaking out this year about their own economic insecurity, their needs for more resources to be able to do their jobs well. And we would say, you know, ditto with an exclamation point for people working with younger children.
We are talking to Marcy Whitebook. She is the director of the Early Childhood Center for the Study of Childcare Employment at the University of California, Berkeley, and they put out the Early Childhood Workforce Index. We're going to talk more about this index in a moment, but we have calls coming in already. Nicole from La Crosse, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to comment on the societal phenomenon, I think, that's related to this, and that is the fact that traditionally feminine roles, which include childcare, often are undervalued by our society. And so I think the fact that women and quote-unquote women work is really not valued as much as traditionally masculine work really is reflected in the pay differential that we see for people who care for children. And also, a secondary comment, I have worked in childcare quite a bit in my past. Right now, I'm currently a child protection social worker. And what I see makes a huge difference in the lives of children, especially kids who really have a difficult home life, is just one caring and consistent adult. And when we have people who are taking care of our children who are worried about their own economic insecurity, where they're going to, you know, get their next meal, how much are they really able to offer these children who might really be in need of one caring adult outside their family to provide that for them?
Thank you very much, Nicole, for that comment. You want to take that, Marcy?
Sure. I mean, hi, Nicole. And I too have worked as an early childhood teacher, and I think you're right in both respects. I think that, you know, the early childhood field is predominantly women, like 97-98% female. And I just want to amend to say we're also talking about family child care providers, too, so we don't just link it to center or school settings. But I think that it is true that, it you know, this work is in that, you know, category of women's work, and just by, you know, by right there, it's devalued in that respect. But I think it's also that there's the more that interacting with kids is perceived as involving care as opposed to education, the more it's seen as unskilled work that anybody can do and not valued. So I think, you know, it's complicated how our assumptions about women's work, you know, are, you know, sort of as the starting point, and then work that really involves young children and caring is, you know, especially devalued. I think your point about economic insecurity and how its impact on the early childhood workforce is just spot on. In fact, our research, we have looked at, we've done surveys with teachers, and this point is childcare center teachers, and basically asked them to assess their work environments in a number of ways, and also to talk about their own economic well-being, like whether or not they're worrying about, you know, food or housing or those kinds of things. And there is a connection that we can see between the level of worry and the quality of care, which is not to say that people who have that worry, and that's most of the early childhood workforce that's, you know, that we have, are not doing an amazing job being as, you know, engaged and attentive as they can be. But it is much harder when you're in the back of your mind, you know, serving snack and thinking about what you're going to feed your own children.
Right. Or whether your gas is going to get turned off or your electricity is going to be on when you get home.
And I think that there's really, you know, nobody, I believe, should be working full time and be worrying about paying for and educating their young children. The shame of that in our country, that is the case for the majority of early childhood workers. Over half of early childhood workers live in families that are receiving some kind of federal income support. We know it's not just in California or Wisconsin or, you know, Arkansas, though Alabama, but there are studies that show the level of food insecurity and people postponing education or postponing health care because their pay is so little. So it really is a situation that's not new. It's, you know, been going on for decades, and we tolerate it. You know, there's a silence around it because we really have a system in the U.S. that shortchanges everybody, children and families, because families are paying so much. A lot of children can't get care or can't get good care. And then the workforce that we're depending on, we're basically asking them to subsidize the care at enormous cost to themselves.
Okay, so families are paying so much. Before we go to break, I want to get to Darcy from Milwaukee. Okay. Darcy, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Thanks for taking my call, and thanks for attention to this topic. I have two little kids in full-time child care. They go to a NAEP-accredited care center with wonderful teachers, and I'm paying over $35,000 a year to have them in that center. And I'm just wondering if the teachers are making so little, where is that money going?
That is an excellent question, Darcy. And I have to admit, Marcy, that is the question that I had last night as I was reading this material. Where is that money going? Because I can tell you that many of us who are taking our kids to preschool are paying a lot of money.
Yes, I am very well aware of that. And I would say that Child Care Aware was a national organization in Washington, actually look, and other groups like the Economic Policy Institute have looked at how the percentage of income and, you know, how much child care is one of the biggest expenses families face. And in fact, child care really is a driver of economic insecurity for most families that are relying on it. And that, you know, the fact I have up here is that infant care in Wisconsin costs more per year than in-state tuition for a four-year public college.
Yes.
Sort of, you know, frame it. But then I think if we addressed our child care financing, we could address a lot of the poverty that women and children and families, you know, experience, or at least economic insecurity. I think that question of how can it be that parents are paying so much and teachers are earning so little. We have, and I just will direct you to our website, or maybe you can direct your listeners to it at the end of the show. We just did a 3-minute video that explains exactly this issue, and it's, you know, it's short, it's to the point, and really trying to lay out that that is the question I get most often from people.
Right. So summarize this video for me.
It has to do with the fact that early childhood is very labor intensive. So in order to do it, you have to have a lot of adults to a small number of children. And once you pay the sort of set costs for the space and food and utilities, insurance and those kinds of things, the amount that's left over, if you have a director, let's say, in a small center and, you know, six teachers or three teachers and three assistant teachers, that's the model we use in our little video, you see that really, when you do the math, you're lucky to get to the median for your state, if that, because the money just doesn't go that far. So I think the reason that you know, if we did that with public school, if we made, you know, if we had parents paying for K-12 education and we didn't share that across the society as a whole, parents would be sort of, you know, buckling under the weight of that. But as kids get older, you have fewer adults that you need for a larger number of children.
So we're going to
the source of it.
We're going to explore that in a moment. I want you to give me the website right now this video is.
Yes. That's cscce.berkeley.edu. And when you just go to our homepage, the link to the video is right there.
Okay, great. So we've got that website. I'm going to put that on my Twitter feed, which is at Carrie Kaufman, so people can see that. And we'll also have it on our WPR page. We are talking about the Early Childhood Workforce Index. We're going to come back and talk about why pre-K is so important in a moment. It's The Morning Show. Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. Early childhood education has been shown to have enormous benefits over the lifespan of a human being, and yet it often gets overlooked in state funding formulas. And the people who are in charge of kids' learning are often barely scraping by. A new Child Care Worker Index calls this a crisis. Marcy Whitebook is the founding director of the Center for the Study of Child Care Employment at the University of California, Berkeley. That center puts out this index. We're taking your calls this morning on early childhood teachers and development, 800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. So, Marcy, I do want to go to this. You alluded to this, that it's really, really, really important to have early childhood development. This is a relatively new idea to the modern world, isn't it?
No. Okay. I'm thinking
100 years ago, people didn't really care about what two-year-olds did. And now we're like, it is really, really important what infants do and what two-year-olds do.
Yes, excuse me. Yes, I think you're right that in terms of our understanding of the importance of the early years, that's really changed. Although, more than 100 years ago, there were people, particularly the founders of the kindergartens, who really did understand that the first years were important. And they defined the age range they were concerned about were 2 and 3 year olds up until school entry, which at that point was a little bit later. And even people, as well as 100 years ago, people were setting up child care centers because, although, of course, now we have so many more families where both adults are working, there have always been families where the mother was, working along, either because she was a single mother or both parents had to work or for whatever reason.
We are an immigrant nation. A lot of people who came from other countries, both parents had to work.
That's right. And so I think, many people, African-American families, a lot of people who, I came from other nations.
Okay.
I think I think that the tipping point of sort of starting to think about early childhood differently, though, I think has come and gone. So during World War II, there were child care centers set up by the federal government because they needed women in the workforce, and there was a big, effort to do that from the federal government. But right after the war, those centers closed down in most places, California, New York, and a couple other places. They kept some of them open. And then in the early 70s, there was another attempt to pass a large early care and education bill, the Comprehensive Child Development Act, that was vetoed by then-President Nixon, with the argument being that in America, we didn't want to, Sovietize our children or we didn't want to do something that communal with child rearing. And so when I came into the field in the 70s, the debate then where there were people starting to demand more child care, but the question was, isn't it bad for children? And so the early research about child care was, does child care damage children? And the answer was no. It was whether the issue for children about child care was really, was it high quality or not? Was it good child care? If it was bad child care, it was problematic. But also, but if it was good child care, it was good. And so that began to sort of shift the discussion away from child care and not child care. And that was happening alongside with the demographics where more and more you had more and more either single-parent families or two-parent, all the available adults were working. And so, but then, as we started the exploration of, cognitive science and really starting to understand more about the human brain, that's when you saw this big shift where people began to understand how what had been theoretical amongst those of us in early childhood that we always said, well, those early years are really critically important. We can see they're laying the groundwork for what comes next. The science then was backing that up and said, well, more than you ever could have imagined. And it's the experiences in those early years can really enhance that development and sort of ensure positive lifelong development and learning, or, in fact, they can impede that development in some ways because the architecture of the brain is sort of laid down in those early years, and it is very sensitive to the social environment in which children work. And I think your first caller talked about, or somebody did, about the need for caring, consistent adults, and that actually is what the science, points to, is that those interactions between children and trusted
adults are really what allow them to feel safe to explore their environment and affect their learning. So I think that has shifted the conversation and made us understand that in some ways our system is backwards. You know, the teachers we think of as needing the least skill and needing, you know, receiving the least pay and having sort of the least important job are the ones working with the youngest children. But in fact, the science would say, actually, we have it flipped.
Okay, so my question here is, though, I think that part of the issue is with kids, with young kids, talking to them is like one of the most important things. Talking to them, holding them, looking in their eyes. We don't value that as much as, do you know reading, writing, and arithmetic?
Right, right. I think it's really hard for people to see the learning that goes on. I mean, well, it's kind of funny because if you talk to any parent or grandparent or anybody who's around the baby, they're going like, oh, they're learning something every day. They sort of see it in action, but we don't think of it, we may think about that happening one-on-one, but we don't think about what is it like to be with a group of children and be tuned into their individual development and sort of facilitating that development. And, you know, talking is part of it, but there's ways to talk to children that actually, you know, are, you know, deepen their exploration and their thinking and you know, promote their learning in different ways. So you're right. I mean, I think people don't see what the skill is involved, or they think all you need is love, or, you know, and of course being loving, caring adult is really, really important.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's just it's a hard thing for people to see, in the same way it's hard for people to add up the numbers of, you know, how come I'm paying so much and people are earning so little? It's we don't really have as a society, a deep understanding of either what it really takes to do it well or sort of how the cost works. And so that, I think, feeds into our sort of letting this status quo, you know, just continue. And in part, the index came out of our assessment of how little the situation for early childhood workers had changed over the last four decades, despite all we've learned about children's development. And so we wanted to do something that kept us, you know, a spotlight on what is happening with this workforce and what are we doing around policy to make things better. And I would say that the way we organize our system in the U.S., it's not, you know, it's not written in stone. I mean, other countries do it differently. We could do it differently.
Okay, so we're going to talk about that in a minute. I do want to get to how we can organize and pay for it in the U.S., but I want to talk about this. What the benefit of early childhood education, when do we start to see this? I've seen statistics on adults who have had early childhood education compared to adults who have not. Is it really stark?
Yes, because we already know that, and I would again qualify that it's when people have access to, you know, high quality early childhood, you see these long lasting effects. And so, and that, you know, we don't have, very few people actually have those really great programs. We know how to do them. We just don't dedicate the resources for it. But there is, you see that when children enter school without having had early childhood, they're behind their peers, you know, in language and social development, and then that sort of can build on itself over time. But, you know, as you're referencing, there are studies that have followed cohorts of people over their lifespan, and you see differences in their, you know, sort of their social life in terms of, you know, relationships. You see it in terms of their work histories. You see it in terms of their educational attainment and things like, you know, their likelihood to have been, you know, incarcerated and along the way, you also see the need for some kinds of assisted, you know, learning experience, like tutoring or assistance, decrease too for kids who have had that input early on. So, there's debates about, is it, you know, $4 for every dollar invested? Is it a $4, $7, $13, whatever the return on investment is? There are different studies and different numbers out there. But pretty much across the board, it's a social investment that provides a return in the sense of later on, you know, what the both for the individuals themselves and for the community and the society at large. So it's you know, it's a good place to put our money, but it's not the, you know, it's hard to get people being willing to direct our money there.
Because of the later on part. We are a society that wants instant gratification.
And I do also think that generally, if you look, you know, at the United States in particular, but that, you know, we do very, very little to help new parents. You know, we don't have paid parental leave, and, you know, we have a almost entire, you know, we have a largely private early childhood system where parents are expected to pay for it. And so we, you know, we, rather than sort of looking at the situation saying, oh my goodness, we could help families, we could help children, you know, this is, you know, we don't do that some because people think that children shouldn't be in child care, or people think that women, you know, shouldn't work outside the home, or that there is no money or whatever. But I also think that, you know, it's also, we don't tend to think about children's rights, or, you know, and we don't think of it in a rights perspective, and just it's just the right thing to do to make sure that the children who are you know, in our communities, who are our future, you know, citizenry, you know, get off to a good start. And, you know, I mean, it is a good long-term investment. It also seems to me sort of a measure of a, you know, a good society too.
We are talking about early childhood and the money, or the lack of money, that early childhood workers make. And we're taking your calls here, 800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. We've got Amy from La Crosse. Welcome to the program, Amy.
Hi.
Hi. So what is your question?
Thanks for having me. Well, I guess it's more of a comment.
Okay.
I've been a licensed child care provider in Wisconsin for nearly a decade. It'll be a decade next year. And I guess I am sort of frustrated with the line that daycare is expensive. Now, if you're in Madison and Milwaukee, yes, daycare is expensive. It's probably $300 a week. But in the rest of the state, in licensed child care, you're probably paying $140 to $160 a week for a child over two. Now, you think that a parent works 40 hours a week, the child's in daycare 45 to 50 hours a week when you include travel time. So it generally works out to $3.2 an hour or $3.55 an hour per child. That is not expensive. The problem is that wages have not been tied to inflation. If everybody was making a minimum of $21 an hour, which is about what it would be had wages been tied to inflation, people could afford their daycare. People could afford their child care. And I think that some subsidized daycare is great. I think that it's somewhat necessary. But I'm also leery of institutionalizing really, really small children. And that's sort of the route that you end up going when you subsidize daycare and you start having it in schools. There are a lot of great programs around the world. But when you look at Germany, their daycare is not academic focused. It's focused on learning, and I'm learning how to be a person and learning to get along with others. They're not trying to teach ABCs. They're not expected to do preschool.
Mm-hmm.
They're expected to manage small children. And their daycare is subsidized, but the parents are also expected to pay part. So, I mean, I know that's kind of a lot there, but
actually,
you know, in addition, infant care, you need a lot of staff for infant care. So if we had maternity leaves and we didn't have babies in daycare until they were one, that would also make daycare more affordable for parents.
Wow. A lot of good ideas there, Amy. You want to address some of these, Marcy?
Sure. I mean, Amy, I'll just start with your last point. I agree with you that if we had paid, you know, parental leave in that first year of life, that certain a lot of countries have, that would really, as long as that parental leave people got enough money to be able to actually live. I mean, that's the problem in California. We do have, you know, a little bit more parental leave than other states, but for people who are low income, if they only can get 50% of their earnings, they can't make it work. So parental leave is part of it. I do think that there is a tendency when people talk about like more of an early childhood system to immediately go to school, kind of school and academic content. And I do think there is, we have to think about those early years, about how learning occurs, and not just to think of it, you know, children learn through play. Part of their learning is learning to get along with other people and, you know, different things, and that we don't want to see little children doing, kill and drill, or, you know, filling out ditto sheets. I guess I'm dating myself by saying a ditto sheet, but in any event. And so I think I think you're pointing to a challenge, which is how do we build a system for people or for young children that sort of ensures that all children have access to those services if that's what their family chooses. They're almost not mandatory anywhere in the world. But there's a high uptake because they're affordable and people perceive them as being, you know, good. But do it that's appropriate for the age of the children we're talking about. A 3-year-old is not the same as a 7 or 8-year-old. And but to your earlier point about, you know, inflation, I think I actually did the numbers of the job that my earnings from the late 70s. And if you updated those for inflation, basically, I was earning then about what people are earning now, and there hasn't been a change. And I think that's been true not only for people doing early childhood work, but also for families. You know, many families are not, their income hasn't kept up. So it's not separate from the issue of what's happened to the wage structure in, you know, the U.S. over the last, you know, number of years. So, and I do really appreciate your point about saying we kind of get in a trap when we say it's expensive. It's expensive for people in terms of their familial budgets, but really it costs a lot of money. But if you look at what it actually would cost to really staff up a program where people are paid decently, and parents, if parents had to pay a fee, it was limited to like 7% of their income or at a certain amount, you realize that we don't put anywhere near enough money into the system in the U.S. And I would also refer to people who want to look at this. So the National Academy of Sciences did a report this year on financing a high-quality early childhood system and built an illustrative example of what it would cost if we were to do it right in the U.S.
We're going to come back and talk about that,
okay,
about financing and making early childhood public. We are talking about the Early Childhood Workforce Index, which shows just how badly preschool teachers are paid. It's the morning show, and we'll be back in a moment. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. We're talking about the low wages of people who work at preschools and daycare and how that fits with the increasing consensus of the importance of early childhood education. Marcy Whitebook is the co-director of the Center for the Study of Child Care Employment at the University of California, Berkeley. And we are taking your calls on this. How much do you value early childhood education as it relates to society? Are you willing to publicly finance it, even if the results of the investment aren't tangible for 20 years or more? Give us a call, 800-642-1234, email ideas@wpr.org, or tweet us at WPR Mornings. We've got Scott from Eau Claire. Scott, welcome to the program.
Hi, good morning. I just want to comment. I have two daughters. They're 8 and 10. They both went through 4K. The first, with my oldest, we paid through it. With the second, it became, like, publicly, they opened a school here in town for 4K specifically. paying all for school of that age.
You mean you're talking about 4-year-olds?
Yeah, 4-year-olds. Okay. And I've seen some benefit with it, with what they came home with and what we talked about what to do. But where I may not agree is with two and three-year-olds. If a parent chooses to do that, send their child to an early learning center out of their own pocket, that is their own choice. I don't know that we need to subsidize for that, because I think that part of having a child and deciding to be a parent is to get your kid ready for that. I think that some of that preparedness that a child should receive should be from the parent. We shouldn't rely on others to teach our kids and get them ready for school and get them the basics. Parents need to engage their kids at home. We did that with our children, and our children are off the charts for their grade. They're testing, a grade or two above their grade level. They go into school at the end of the year, they get tested, and they test to the next grade every year.
So, Scott, that's
put a lot of work at home, and I think that more parents need to do that instead of just dropping them in front of an iPad or putting a TV on Netflix and going about their business.
Okay, you're breaking up. So I do want to, I hope we can get him back, because I do want to ask you a question. I want to know if one or both of you stayed home with your kids, because that's kind of the issue, that people work and their kids need somewhere to go. Are you there?
No, I'm here. If you can, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Are you there?
Yeah, you're sounding kind of watery, but go ahead.
No, we both work. My wife and I both work full time. I actually, when my two kids were youngest, I worked two jobs. I worked full-time during the week, 55 hours, and I worked 3 weekends a month, doing 25, 30 hours on the weekends. And, there wasn't a lot of time, but I value my children, I value my children's education, and I made time for it. I didn't have a wife myself, but, the time we had, we fit into our children. And I just don't think that a lot of people do that on their own now, and I don't think we need the government to say that we need to do it and we're going to pay for it.
Okay. Thank you very much, Scott. Marcy Whitebook, you advocate very clearly for we need to think about early childhood education in the same way that we think about elementary school education. We just need to start it earlier, right?
Well, I guess what I would say is I think we need to think about a public financing for early care and education so that I think when you say it like public K through 12, I would say financing along the lines of where we basically have a system in our country where every child is entitled to, a seat in the classroom, and that their access to those services are not based on whether or not their parents can afford them. And I think what we have now in the country is that children's access to quality services or to services at all is often based on how much money their families have. So if you have a full-time working parent who doesn't have, or parents who don't have flexible jobs and they can't change it, they might not be able to earn enough to be able to pay for the services. And even for families who are maybe earning more than a low wage, they still struggle with it. So that's why it's interesting in the Army, they set up a system so that everybody in the military has access to those services, and they have a percentage of their income they pay for those services, but that percentage, it's not where you have people who are at the lower end of the scale paying, 40% of their salary or 50% of their salary for child care, and people at higher levels are paying, much less than that. But I think to the point about parents, I think we have to think about how, life is organized in the 21st century. And I think that parents, yes, will have and always will have a responsibility and a really important role in, nurturing and helping their children to learn. I don't think it's like an either or. I think if children are in an early childhood setting, that doesn't mean the parents aren't playing a role, or if they're not, that there isn't a role for early childhood. But it is, in most places in the world, it's not mandatory that families send their children to services before formal schooling begins. Sometimes formal schooling begins earlier, like at 4 in different places, sometimes 3. But what you see in places where that service is available, most parents do take advantage of it because they see it as an opportunity for their children. And I don't, so I think that when we, so I guess I don't see it as parents not investing in their children. It sounds like you didn't, you and your wife, you know, did a great job and, you know, really would have worked incredibly hard to give your children, you know, all the experiences that, you know, have helped them to succeed. And that's fabulous. But I don't think if someone needs to use, you know, subsidized child care or early childhood at 2, that means that they don't have the same, you know, aspirations and aren't putting the same type of energy into their children's development. So, you know, but I think these are the kinds of things we need to sort of have more of a debate about. Like, are we as a society going to invest more, and what should that look like, and how do we want to, you know, build the boundaries of that? You know, Carrie, I wanted to just say one thing to your listeners, because I didn't mention this, is that on our website there is a Wisconsin-specific fact sheet so that you can see what the earnings of early childhood teachers are. There's a link there to how much you can put those side-by-sides with cost of services. And to your earlier caller, Amy's point, actually, child care workers, preschool teachers, and child care center directors' wages actually have decreased slightly, and a little bit more than slightly for child care center directors between 2016 and 2018. So that information is up for your readers, and they can get it at the same cscce.berkeley.edu.
That will be up on our website and on Twitter. Shannon, we don't know where she's from. She emailed and said, oh, she's from Bayfield, and we have a real child care crisis here, in large part due to a provider shortage. Many families are forced to have one parent stay home to watch children until they go to school. I tried to start a child care center and found it difficult to find staff and substitutes who were qualified, considering the courses required, and were able and willing to dedicate themselves fully to dependable child care. The early childhood center near town could fill 3 more classrooms with all the children on its waiting list, most who will never be lucky enough to get a spot. So it's not just that people are underpaid, it's that you can't find workers. And what are the requirements?
Well, the requirements for early childhood teachers vary by state, and they also vary by the type of program. And so I know that in some states, for example, in pre-K, the lead teacher has to have a BA or what they call a child development associate or equivalent credential for the assistant teacher, and that is not the case in Wisconsin. And I actually don't have in front of me. I'm sorry.
That's okay. So here's the question, though.
Wisconsin, but it,
here's my question,
so it,
though.
It depends on the state. And in some states, there's some not much pre-service training that you need to have. In some states, there are some coursework you have to have, you know, moving towards a degree and depending on the type of program. But I think the bigger issue is that it's particularly when the economy's doing relatively well, and you know there are more jobs out there for people, it is always a struggle to recruit and retain people in early childhood, and because the pay is so low,
right.
And particularly for people who have invested in their education and training, there's so much of a penalty for that, for working in early childhood compared to working in other fields, that people, in making choices for themselves and their families, often say, well, I would like to do this work, but I just can't afford to do it. Or like your caller who said, I tried to set up a center. It was really hard to find people. You know, I can't tell you how many times I've been out somewhere in the world and, you know, just randomly talking to someone, you know, looking for a new car or, you know, buying something, and the conversation comes up about what do you do, and I'll tell people, and they say, oh, I worked in childcare, but I couldn't afford it. I couldn't make a living.
Right.
And so I think, you know, we have this need. Family has this need. The waiting list, you know, or, you know, sort of, in some places they won't even put you on a waiting list because they have so many people on it. And we have a hard time getting people to do the work. And so if you think about transforming the financing and transforming the jobs, you also have potentially a job that is incredibly important to society, and you know, it's not going to get shipped offshore.
Right.
And you know, and it's something that we need in our communities, but we, and so I think we don't think about the workforce as this is a workforce we could strengthen and build and could be a source of really, you know, important employment for a lot of people. But as it is now, it doesn't, you know, it's completely understandable why people make other choices.
So we've got Bud, who is driving through Wisconsin. Bud, welcome to the program. You there?
Yes, ma'am, I am.
Okay. Welcome to the program.
I'd just like to say, it's the first time I heard the program, I was flipping through, heard something about child care, so I stopped. And I'm just going to be honest. I'll make a statement, then I'm going to ask questions, then I'll hang up. I don't feel that it's my place to get my tax dollars to put into this. And the reason why I say this is it's parents' places to know if they can afford it or not. And if they can't, then we need to look at the bigger picture of what the issue is. It's not the child care system to raise our children. And I have a daughter. And I pay for child care. And I know, walking in the door, how much it's going to cost me every week, whether she's there or not.
Right.
So, with that being said, why are we pushing these children not to be a kid no more, but to skip so many steps from that critical age of 1 through 4 of just simple behaviors?
Okay, but I'm going to have to...
No, ma'am. Manners. And now I'm... And then I'll stop right there.
Okay, thank you, but we're running out of time here. I find it interesting that people think, Marcy, that early childhood it means that you're going to take kids and you're going to teach them how to read at the age of 1 or the age of 2, or that it precludes good parenting.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I think public opinion is changing on that. I think that there have been surveys done where more than half and up into like 2/3 and cross parties and maybe even higher in some places of people saying they think early care and education is important. They'd be willing to spend their tax dollars on it. So there's, you know, there's a difference in opinion on that question.
Mm-hmm.
But I think to your point, there is, I think it goes back to the earlier thing we're talking about. We don't know how to think about learning divorce from school. So when people think about early care and education, the image that pops in their mind are toddlers, you know, sitting behind desks, or you know, and rather than thinking about what does education look like for younger children.
And it looks like play, right?
It looks like play, and it is play, you know, and it's facilitated play, but it's play. So there's that, and I do think there is this, you know, it's a holdover that somehow if your children are in childcare, somehow you as a parent are not doing, you know, meeting your responsibility. And I think, you know, that there are most parents have their children in some kind of their children are being taken care of or are in some childcare other than with them because parents are working. And
right.
It doesn't mean that they're not playing a role as parenting. It's more or less what parenting is like now. And people may say, well, I wish we could go back to a time where that wasn't the case, but
it's the case. Marcy Whitebook is the co-director of the Center for the Study of Childcare Employment at the University of California, Berkeley. Thanks for being with us, Marcy.
You're welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
The Morning Show is produced by Colleen Leahy, Brianne Shasso, Chris Molina, Laura Pavin, and Sarah Hopeful. Michael Derringer is the technical director. Keely Bultina is the executive producer. And I'm Carrie Kaufman.